Thanks for tuning in to Happy Horror Time. Before we get to our interview with David Howard Thornton, we're going to play a quick promo for Film Rage. It's a really great movie review podcast, and we think our listeners would enjoy it. Check it out.
It's time to feel the rage. Join us on Film Rage, where we talk movies, current releases, coming attractions, streaming, and classic films as well. Directors and actors, beware, as you cannot hide from the rage. My name is Bryce, and I'm part of the Film Rage crew, which also includes Jim.
Hey, hey.
And Murray.
Yo.
Why is it you always talk all the time? I can't understand why.
This is the Merman, the voice of reason. These two can't agree on anything most of the time. Some movies are Mondo, some are just suck. Every week, something is going to make us rage. Join us every Wednesday and
feel the rage.
Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And my name is Matt Emmert. And we are here today with the guy who puts the terrifying in Terrifier. He portrays Art the Clown both in Terrifier and the upcoming Terrifier 2. A very talented actor, David Howard Thornton.
Hey!
Hey! How's it going, David? How are you tonight?
Doing good, doing good.
Great. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this with us. You know, before we jump into Terrifier, because obviously that's going to be like the crux of all of this, but we were just interested, where are you from originally, and growing up, were you always interested in acting?
Yeah, I'm originally from Huntsville, Alabama, of all places.
Wow.
Yeah, I've lost a lot of my accent. I can bring it back if I have to, though.
No, I know you can with the voiceover. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but okay.
Yeah, but I've been basically acting my whole entire life. I started off doing church theater and graduated doing community theater and then graduated to moving to New York and doing it professionally.
Wow. Did you do Bye Bye Birdie?
I almost did in high school. I was the first person in my high school to actually turn down a role in the high school theater department.
Because
it's a long story.
We want to hear it. Wait. You turned down a high school, as in they were like, hey, congratulations, you got this role. And you're like, thanks.
Offer only.
You'll understand why, because it's like my high school theater department was very political. It was all about, had nothing really to do with talent. It had to do with whose mommy and daddy paid the most money to the theater department. Yeah, it's one of those places. And like the previous year, we did West Side Story, and we ended up taking it to the International Thespian Competition in Lincoln, Nebraska that summer after my junior year. Yeah.
Wow.
So, that summer I had been cast as the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz in the local community theater. And I had to choose because we need you to play this role that you did in West Side Story. I was a one scene role in West Side Story. I played Glad Hand, the principal at the dance at the gym.
Oh my gosh.
Like the part that John Astin played in the movie. Made him very Woody Allen-ish and everything. It's very, I'm not so nervous. It's just very skittish. Like, I had fun with it, but they're like, well, we need you to play this role. It's very important because it's a big thing for our theater department. I'm like, the Scarecrow is a role I had always wanted to play.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to turn down the Scarecrow and taking a smaller role in the show because they didn't think I was going to be able to rehearse both shows at the same time. They didn't realize how quickly I memorized things. But it was,
that's a great skill.
It served me well in school. But because of that, my high school teacher's like, well, we promise next year, since your senior year and you've made this big, huge, sacrifice for us, we promise you that in the musical next year you will have one of the lead roles. Okay, this is the trade-off, thank you. Okay, we can compromise here. So fast forward to my senior year audition for Bye Bye Birdie. I was up for McAfee, the father.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay.
The Paul Lynn's old role.
Yeah.
And I was up for it, and they gave me the part of Mo the bartender in this one little scene.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, are you kidding me? And the same time, I had been asked to be in three different community theater shows, like lead roles, like Tommy G. Listen, the Music Man, and Yeah, and
I was
like,
GLS too.
Yes, no,
not to name drop it.
I don't want to brag. It's about you.
Oh, that God! I tell you what, having to do the whole yelling and screaming at the mayor right after dancing Shapoopy for 6 minutes, you're just like.
Well, fun fact: I couldn't do the show because I got chicken pox, so I didn't get to do it.
You know what? I was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Nice. That's. I want to do Little Shop too.
Oh, I can see. Yeah. So did you ask the director? This is so funny because I love these kinds of tangents. But like, mm-hmm. did you ask the director or did you bring it up? Like, excuse me, you told me I was promised.
Like, we had a deal.
I did. And they're like, we just decided not to cast you in the role. I'm like, we had a deal. I sacrificed a huge role for you guys, one that I had been dying to play most of my life. Last summer, just for going up to Lincoln, Nebraska for my one scene part in your musical. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing this again for you guys. I've been asked to, I'd rather, because it was high school theater, I'd rather be out there in the community theater learning from people that are better than me, like adults. Mm-hmm. That's where I, you know, hone my skills. I'm like, I'd rather be out there with those guys, like really, you know, growing as an actor instead of just being held back doing crappy little high school theater. And so I turned it down and people are like, what? Other kids were like, what, we can do that? We can actually turn down the roles? I'm like, yes.
Well, you know, for girls had it much harder than boys. Like, at least in my high school, like there'd be like 8 guys and for a girl, it'd be like 50.
Oh, yeah.
Now our high school theater department was pretty well known in Alabama and especially in Huntsville. Yeah. So it was like we had a lot of people involved in it. And so that, you know, the musical every year was like a big deal.
Right. Like the whole town was involved.
Well, yeah, basically.
Boy, does that director feel dumb now?
Oh, I know. I loved it. They were even like, what? They couldn't even fathom that someone was turning down. It's like, and they weren't even theater. Like, they weren't even theater majors. They were former English teachers that just, they're like, oh, can you teach theater classes? They didn't know what they were doing.
Wow.
You got to go there.
Their direction was always bigger.
Yeah, no. Oh, high school theater. Yes. I did mostly plays. I wasn't a big singer, so I was in a ton of plays, but I did do the one musical we did, which was Little Shop of Horrors. It was just like side characters, but it's a really fun show.
But I think it's Hollywood is like high school theater. I mean, just in the mm-hmm. sense that it's competitive.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's what gave me a backbone, you know, for this industry too, is just like learn to just take things and like, then you don't have to take things sometimes too.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I do. It's like, I'm not taking this role. Sorry. I'm like, yeah. I'm going to do other roles that are bigger and better.
And learned at a young age how to do, you know, so we saw obviously in your resume, you've done a ton of voiceover work. I think for over like 200 different characters.
I do over 200 characters. I haven't played that many yet. I would love to one day, knock on wood.
Can you please tell us from 1 to 200 ever said, but what are some of like your favorite characters that you've ever voiced over that you can voice over?
Oh gosh. And like it's, one of them, he was, it's weird to describe because I didn't really talk. I was just a haunted tree in an animated show. And it was one of those things where I was just put on the spot too, because they're like, we need someone to do this voice for this tree. It just makes groans and everything. Can you do that? I'm like, yeah, sure. No, just, I was just
they're like, done.
Like, okay. It was just this is so weird, and I was making a very sympathetic character. Like, no. Oh, you added a new depth to them. Like, I guess so. Yeah,
they're so like, can you tell us the backstory behind the haunted tree and what has haunted the tree?
It was just so random. It's like that. That's like some of the stuff I've done in the past. I like a lot of animation for kids. I was like their utility guy, kind of like how Frank Welker is, where he just goes and does animal sounds. Oh, so yeah. They would just call me in. It's like, David, we need someone to do a sheep this week. Can you come in? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, cool.
You didn't say this weekend is bad for me?
Yeah.
Sorry. I work in advertising. So.
Oh, I understand.
Were you the type of guy then growing up, were you always doing like impressions? Do you do impression, like celebrity impressions too?
Not really celebrities as much as I do like cartoon characters. It's just it's like, it's got to be an interesting sounding voice. And that's when it's like, if it's like normal person, I'm just like, ah, their voice isn't interesting enough for me to learn. No offense. Cause I have friends all the time. One of our friends, I'm like,
No, I get it. More like not specific people, but like more like if it's a general thing. Yeah, I get that. It's kind of, I guess that's putting you on the
spot.
They're
like, entertain us.
Yeah, yeah. But like cartoon characters, it's no problem because usually those are very big and broad characters. Yeah. So I have no problem doing that. It's like, what? You want me to do Bugs Bunny? Yeah, okay. Ain't I stinking?
That's amazing. I didn't want to be the like cheesy person to say like do a couple for us, but you know if you want to throw any in there,
you
I'm sure.
Did.
Yeah, no, so I love doing the Warner Brothers.
Bugs Bunny is a good one.
Speaking of big characters, I mean, moving into getting into Terrifier, how did you first hear about the audition for Terrifier? Had you seen All Hallows Eve before the audition?
I had, yes. Yeah. Okay. So, and I love the character too. I was like, oh my God, he's like an evil Mr. Bane.
That's true. Yeah.
That would be such a fun character to play. So I randomly, it was when I was in between acting jobs. I had just come back from touring with How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical. Ooh. And I decided to take about 4 months of my life off just to focus on acting. I was like, because I was waiting tables at the same time. And I was like, I just want to focus on acting, see what I can do career-wise right now. Because, you know, waiting tables, you just get so caught up in doing that. It takes you away from everything else. So
it's
like,
the hardest job ever.
Yeah, and it's exhausting.
Oh, man, I do not miss it. I did it for 13 years. It's just
God.
Boom.
Wow.
Soul sucking. But so, yeah, I just came across an audition notice and it worked out for me. They were looking for a tall, skinny guy that had like a physical comedy experience, play art. And I'm like, that's me.
And it's so cool that you already knew the character. And now I know going into the audition story, and I read the audition story, so I know what you're going to say, but I want to ask you it because it's such a cool story. Can you tell the people listening what you did or what you had to do in your audition for art?
Yeah, because it wasn't your traditional like audition for a role because, you know, art doesn't talk. And I mean, I knew that, but I still expected maybe to get some kind of prep beforehand. Like say come up with a scene or something like that. So, but I walk in there and there was nothing and I didn't have a script or anything. I walked in the room and see all these other people with scripts. I'm just like, oh God, no. Oh no. I am not prepared. I am not prepared. Oh no. Cause that was also like my first big, huge film audition. And I was like, oh no. And so they call me in the room. I'm like, I am so sorry. No one gave me sides. They're like, oh, you don't need them. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's like art doesn't talk. You don't need them. So I'm like, well, what do you guys want me to do? And they're like, well, just come up with a scene where you decapitate a guy and you're happy about doing it.
Totally normal. Totally
normal.
I've done it so many
times. Yeah, you should be like, well, let me pull from my wealth of experience with that. Go.
Oh, exactly. And that's what it was. And go. I'm like, can I have a few minutes to think? I was like, no, we just want to see how you think on your feet. I'm like, oh, okay. And this is what came up. I don't know where it came from. Inside of my dark recesses of my brain, those are the moments where I just turn off my brain and just let whatever happen. And I did this whole thing where I like cartoonishly snuck up behind my victim, knocked him out, took out a hacksaw from my bag, and I sawed off his head. I picked it up, kind of looked at it, and I taste it. And I'm like, don't like it. So I take out a salt shaker and season it some, taste it again. I'm like, oh, this is good. I approve. So then I just kind of like bathe in the blood a little bit and I'm like, woo, and dance a little bit and hopped out on my little merry way. And that's what got me the role.
Was the director in the room?
Yeah, it was Damien, our producer, Phil. They were just laughing their heads off when I finished. Cause I totally tuned them out. And so I didn't see how they were reacting or anything until the end of it. And like, they're just dying. And like, they asked me right there on the spot, like, can you come in for a makeup test? I'm like, sure.
That's gotta be best feeling.
It is, because that hardly ever happens in an audition where you can basically walk out of there knowing you have the role.
Were the people that were out there that with scripts and stuff, were they also mm-hmm. all did, was anybody, did anybody show up dressed as a clown or really try to overdo it? Or did you see other people?
Didn't see anybody else there auditioning for art, but I think they were all, there were a lot of people there auditioning for like the crazy homeless woman and stuff like that. But so I saw a lot of women over there just trying to make themselves look disheveled and like, ah.
So when you finish your audition, did they open the door and they're like, all arts can go home?
No. I actually didn't know. I actually completely had the role for a few months when they called me in for the makeup test and they're doing that. And I just like, so does this mean I actually have the part? I'm like, yeah, you didn't know. I'm like, no one told me.
Confirmed.
So I was going to ask you, so obviously the role of Art the Clown was previously played by Mike Gianelli in both yes. when it was a short film and in the anthology All Hallows Eve. Do you know why Mike decided not to return to the role?
I think he just wanted to do other things with his life.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think he really wanted to be a professional actor or anything like that. I think he just wanted to do other things. I don't know the full story, but I think also it's just like he just didn't want to go through all the makeup again.
Oh, he hated the makeup. And when you first got the role, did you feel any pressure to play it like Mike had, or did you try not to let his performance influence yours? Did you kind of want to make it your own take, even though it was sort of an established character?
It was a little bit of both, because I know how I am as a fanboy. You know, when people take on a role someone else had previously played, I'm special like that, you know, with the different Jokers out there. It's like, oh God, what are they going to do to this? And so I was like, oh no, it's all going to come back and bite me in the ass now. So I was like, man, someone's going to be judging me the way I judge other people. They're like, he's not as good as the original. So that was always in the back of my head.
Well, who's your favorite Joker?
Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill by far. I mean, like, it's just, I wish we could get a live action version of him playing the Joker, but just like what he does with his voice alone is amazing. You can't, that's the best version out there you can get. So,
oh wow. Yeah.
So not Jack Nicholson.
Jack was great, but he's still Jack Nicholson playing the Joker.
He tends to be Jack Nicholson in a lot of films.
Yeah.
Hi, playing Jack Nicholson. No, but that's great. And also, and one thing I forgot to ask you even before the audition, were you a big fan of horror before this? Like, had you wanted to be in a horror movie, or did it kind of just fall in your lap when this came to be?
I was a fan, but I never imagined I would be doing horror, because I mean, like, when you look at me, I'm like a little bit of a breeze will blow me aside. So I'm like, I never imagined this. Exactly. So it's just like, I would love to do a horror villain, but odds are me ever playing one of those kind of killers is, you know, next to nothing. So it's like, if I'm ever going to be in a horror movie, I'll probably be like the Randy character from Scream.
Which is a great iconic character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like,
wasn't
that would be a fun role.
Son of the Mask? It wasn't.
Yeah. Don't was talk he? About that movie.
Oh, wow.
Do you like that movie?
what was your inspiration for Art the Clown? The Son of the Mask.
Oh, God. That's when people are like, okay, pass.
No.
Oh, snap.
So you get the role, and then what sort of, if any, preparation did you do before filming, other than going out and murdering people just to see? Because I know that's such a common question, but especially for like a villain like this, especially a villain who doesn't speak, I feel like mentally you do have to really prepare to get in that headspace. Was there anything you did to prepare, or was it more on the spot type of preparing yourself?
A little bit of both. I went back and rewatched what Mike did with the character just so I could get the basic nuances of him, you know, because you got to stick true to what came before. You know, you don't want to go totally off in a different direction or something like that. And
of course,
like Mike did a great job. He set a great foundation for me, but I kind of took like the Kane Hodder approach to it, where he's like, he looked at all the people that came before him, but then added his own thing to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. And I just delved into like my vast like memory bank of just great physical comedians. And I grew up watching all the old black and white ones, like, you know, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, you know, all the way up to like Mr. Bean.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, love. Yeah. I mean, no, Jones. For the role. I mean, so you get to the actual filming, and then there's obviously the whole transformation process. And I know it's a huge process, but can you tell us about that? Like how long it took and what it entailed?
Did the director give you a lot of say in like, was it like a group effort or was he very specific on things?
You mean in how we played it or
how I played it?
Makeup and stuff was established. What did that entail? And also was the director very involved in like,
I'll address the makeup first. That was an interesting process. It's about a 3-hour process where Damien, oddly enough, he's using the mold of Mike Gianelli's face. He made a mold of my face, but the mask that comes from it does not look nearly as good as Mike's original mask. The cheekbones are a little bit different. So Damien's such a stickler for details and stuff like that. He didn't want to change it up too much. So he's like, we'll just use Mike's mold. So he has to take a little bit more care to like actually get it to mold to my face better. So he has to like very just, you know, slowly just glue it to my entire face, which takes about, you know, like I said, 3 hours to do. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So that's a process.
So every time you get there 3 hours before your time of filming, basically that would be your call time.
Yeah. Wow. And then it's usually just sit up and hurry up and wait. So, cause after that they, you know, I've had days where I get there and, you know, early and I'm still not on set for like 8 hours. I'm like, that's just how a film goes though.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of waiting around.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hurry up and wait.
So can you eat or drink with the costume on?
It's hard. Of course I have to take out the teeth. You know, that's the big thing, but it's like, I have to be very careful about my mouth.
Oh my
because
God.
That falls apart so easily with the mask we've been using. It's this gelatin based mask, so it's like a little bit of liquid on there and it starts to fall off, so it's like
three hours to put it on. How many hours to take it off?
About
5 minutes. You're like
and then I have to like spend about 30 minutes just scrubbing off all the glue that was underneath it, so that's an arduous process too. So it's like, when everybody else is ready to go home, I'm still there. I want to go to bed.
Well, you know, so just to piggyback on Tim's question there, like you're so expressive as art. And first of all, it's an incredible performance. We're huge fans.
Yeah.
And it's just, you do such a great job of just putting in every creepy facial expression and gesture possible. But what I was wondering is, like Tim was asking, were a lot of those kind of your own creations, or what, like, I guess how hands-on was Damien with like, he wants you to do this type of expression, or were they a lot of your own creations for the part?
I would say it's about 50-50. Because Damien knows a lot of what he wants. He's very Kubrickish at times, where he's just all about the certain details. So sometimes he knows exactly what type of face he wants me to make and how he wants me to turn my head, and he'll tell me that kind of stuff. But other times he's like, let's just play around with it and see what we come up with. And I think that's where we've got a good relationship as director and actors. Like we play off of each other very well. It's like, he's more of the horror scary guy, I'm more of the comedy guy. And we bring those two things together and we just play around. Sometimes we'll do like a very serious version, scary version, sinister version of the scene. And then we'll do a take of where I'm just a little bit more funny with it. And that way he has options when he's editing. He's like, okay, let's see if this works this way and this way. And then, you know, sometimes I'm like, I really love that if we did it this way, then I see how he edited it. I'm like, oh God, no, your version is so much better. It works better this way instead of the other way, I think. Yeah. So.
And a lot of horror films try to have that balance of comedy and horror, and it just does not pan out. But this one does.
Yeah, because
it's so good.
It does. And also it's almost like there's, sometimes the comedic parts are the scarier parts because this character as a villain is literally enjoying in a comedic fashion, you know, this brutal murders of people.
Yes.
So it is, like Tim said, it's the balance is really great. And, you know, another thing that I love about this film is that about halfway through the film, they just kill off the main character who you thought was going to be the final girl, you know, Jenna is that how we pronounce it, Tara, they just kill her off when you've been like rooting for the whole time and introduce kind of this new final girl. Do you know, like, if that was something, you know, that Damien wanted to do just to kind of shock viewers and kind of turn the whole horror formula on its head?
I mean, it's basically an homage to Psycho in that way.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Good. They, you know, they did the same thing in that. So that's kind of what he was doing there. Is this, you know, we had a lot of homages to like previous slasher films that came before us. It's our love letter to those films.
So, yeah. Yeah. And it is great because especially that you can get people. I remember the first time I watched when they kill off that character, you're like shocked because they've gotten you to actually care about the character.
Yeah.
You
know?
Well, I have a question. So you're from Huntsville, Alabama, and you're part of church plays and
yeah.
counselor. So like when you go home, do you recommend people see the movie or like, because there's some shocking things in it. Like,
yeah. it's that's,
like, I was
that's,
just curious, like how's that pan out?
At his church services.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I don't really go to church anymore anyway, so that's the good thing there, so that people aren't shocked. You know, a lot of people I still know back home are very religious in that way, and it was funny. My sister at the time, she's mentally physically handicapped, so she's lived in different group homes. The group home she was in at the time was a very, very religious group home, and like the woman that ran it, and they decided to watch Terrifier one night. I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
Is there a PG-13 version?
No.
Oh.
So what did they think?
they were very proud of me.
Well, that's good. Sometimes if you can, you know, at least appreciate it for what it is, even if it isn't your choice of movies,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
That's really funny.
Hey, my sister enjoyed it, but she's like, "That was, you were mean. You were so mean." I'm like, "I know." It's like, some people didn't like it. I'm like, yeah, I understand.
Like,
and I have friends that are like that too. They're like, I love you, but I cannot watch it because they're so afraid of clowns and stuff like that. I'm like, it's okay. Your friends.
That's great. So moving through the film, I do want to talk about the scene where you skin and scalp basically the poor homeless woman and do that kind of Buffalo Bill dance thing, wearing her hair and boobs and nothing else. So, so first off, when you're filming that, are you actually naked but wearing like a boob cast or like what? Please tell us about that scene. What did that entail?
Yeah, I was naked.
Wow. No, I mean, covering on the front, I'm thinking, or no?
Yeah, well, most people don't look and see what I'm actually wearing down there, too. I'm also wearing her vajayjay.
Oh, snap.
I did notice I thought there was some kind of tucking action going on or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're wearing her full front.
Yeah, I'm wearing the boobs and I'm wearing the vajayjay. So just like, yeah. Yeah, and that was a very interesting day because, like, Damon called me up that morning. He's like, Dave, do you have a cock sock? And I'm like, a what? A condom? He's like, no, a cock sock. Something to hide your junk so you don't see it on screen. I'm like, yeah, sure. I just have one of those just laying around.
you're like, doesn't
everybody?
Everybody
does. Yeah, like a merkin. He's like, no, not a merkin. He's like, just bring a sock with you. I'm like, okay. Well, I didn't think. And so I show up with this bright white tube sock. And and this prosthetic didn't totally cover up everything. So I'm like, sorry. So I come out and they just see this bright white. And they're like, oh, no. Oh, we can't hide that.
We can't like, hide that. You're like, why, thank you.
I know. I was like, yeah, I know.
But I mean, the other girl was hanging upside down naked. So you got it a little easier.
Yeah. Well, that's actually where they use a little bit of CG in the film, too, because he had to digitally edit the white out.
Oh, from you, from under prosthetic. I love it. The prosthetic for JJ. If only everyone got a chance to wear a prosthetic for JJ.
I know. It was very interesting. It was like, because that was also Samantha Scafidi, who played Victoria, her very first night on set with me. So that was a very interesting way to introduce myself to her. Because, you know, like, I'm like, hi, I'm David, and these are my boobs.
and my hair.
Welcome to Terrifier.
Wow, that's amazing. Trial by fire. You know, so, yeah. I mean, that obviously is an incredibly memorable scene. But in another thing we wanted to ask you about in the film. So at the end, right when the cops are about to capture Art, you know, he takes out a gun and shoots himself. And then at the end in the morgue, you know, he kind of comes back to life for like a final scare. So clear this up for us. Are we supposed to think that when Art shot himself. It was like a trick gun and he really didn't. Or are we supposed to think there's kind of a supernatural element here and that's what brought him back to life?
Or all of the above.
Yeah. Well, there, I mean, there's not a spoiler at all, but you know, it's like, yeah, there's definitely a supernatural element to him, because if you notice in the morgue scene, when he gets up, there is an exit wound in the back of his head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So good, because I was like, I was watching it the other day and I was like, there's obviously there's got to be, and they have like the lights flash, is a supernatural element. But then, and then I thought if it was a trick gun, that'd be very tough to really make look. I don't know if Art the Clown is that talented in those types of things.
So when the film was completely done, was it like a red carpet premiere, or how did you first see the product?
I first saw it. I mean, they had done a screening of a rough cut in Telluride, Colorado. And that's we didn't even have like the decapitation of the exterminator in that, or the morgue scene in that version. We added that later because people wanted more to the ending, and one of our producers wanted one extra kill scene. So we made that extra kill scene with the decapitation. But we did that, but I wasn't able to go to that premiere. And so I was only able to hear about the response, and everybody was going wild over it. I'm like, oh, cool. So I didn't get to see it until 2017 when we did a premiere at Lincoln Center here in New York, which was
fun. Oh, wow.
So it was standing room only in there too.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. So that was a lot of fun, because I was able to sit there with some of my friends, and all the people around me didn't know who I was. And so I was able to really get the real reactions from the crowd around me and see how people were responding to it. And it was like a freaking rock concert. And then like afterwards we did like a Q&A session. So they're like, David, come up. And I stand up and people are like, oh my God, it's him.
It's him.
No, it's him. Oh my God. That's what he looks like.
That's awesome. Well, Lincoln said that's really cool. Yeah, like, that's a great huge first screening. Actually, maybe it's better you missed the Colorado one. If that's
it was great. It was so much fun. Then we officially released in 2018 on like, you know, streaming.
Netflix,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, not Netflix at first. It was like Vudu and Vimeo or something like that. Amazon Prime, all that fun stuff. But later on, it starts snowballing. That's when Netflix picked us up.
Yeah. So now moving on to the sequel, I mean, I know that you probably can't tell us a lot about it, but well, a couple things. So what is the latest on in terms of release dates? Do you know? Because we were all excited. It was when it was supposed to come out for October, and I know the pandemic shut down some of the filming, but do you guys have any idea of a release date or like a release month-ish?
We are still looking at that right now, because Damien's in the middle of editing everything. And I think once he's done editing, we're going to start shopping around a distribution. So we don't know who's going to distribute it yet. So knock on wood, we'll get someone good.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I don't think we're going to have the troubles getting that this time, like we did the first film, because, you know, now people want this film because they've seen what a success the first one was. So, and they know, you know, the hype that's already around her right now. So I think people would be stupid to pass on it right now.
Absolutely. Oh, of course. Yeah. And there's such a huge following already.
And what
with
was, is it called a Kickstarter? Like it was just. Like,
yeah. We Indiegogo campaign that we did for it. Yeah. We set our original goal for just $50,000. And I told Damon, let's do it about $100,000. He's like, no, I don't even think we'll get $50,000, but let's try for $50,000. I'm like, okay, cool. And we got that $50,000 in the first 3 hours of the campaign.
That's amazing.
Talk about what a flattering thing to do. That. So is there anything that you can tell us about the plot of the film? Like, is there anything you can share with us?
Well, this one is a little bit more plot oriented than the first one. There is an overarching story going on, and you know, it's not like deep to the, like, you know, Get Out type of level of plot or something like that. We know what we are. We're fun slasher film. We're not trying to be anything else, but there's more of a narrative element to it, and it's more concerned about the this family. Sienna, the main character in this, and her brother and her mom, and it's how art impacts their lives. And there's I don't know if you could say there's a connection between the two, but there's a reason. I don't know. I can't say.
That's okay.
No, it's
I
okay.
Just yeah, but
a kid's in it. I hope you don't kill kids.
Well, but they're teenagers, right? They're not, because I saw the trailer. They're not like kids.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, then how about this? I'll give you a just answer one or two when I say Terrifier 1 or Terrifier 2. Which one has a bigger body count, one or two?
Oh, two.
Okay, which one is bloodier or gorier and gorier?
Two.
Two.
Oh, two.
Okay, and last most important question, which one has more shit being spread over the walls of a bathroom?
Say maybe two.
Oh, my God.
In a way
that's a trick question. I didn't know they were going
to. Yeah, it's in a way that you're not going to expect, I guess.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. But it's. But yeah, going back to the blood, though, oh my God, yeah, I think Damien has outdone himself with the prosthetics. He's upped his game. He's like, well, you know, because we're like, how we were like to set the bar too high with the first film with the hacksaw scene. It's like,
yeah.
Well,
oh my gosh, it's so memorable. Like, I want to show it to my mom, but I'm reluctant.
Oh my God, no, yeah,
which is understandable. I can understand. It's, but we're like, well, you know, let's swing for the fences, see if we can top it, you know. If not, oh well, we tried, we had fun doing it. And like the scene that we recently filmed was insane. It was just the over the top gore in this scene is crazy.
I can't wait.
I I think I had seen on it, but is Samantha Scafidi coming back to reprise Victoria, because she still, like, is she in the sequel?
I guess it's safe to say, yeah, because there are some, like, you know, they posted stuff on Instagram and stuff like that of her. So, yeah.
Okay, good. Because, you know, there's the whole thing of, like, her becoming basically a killer herself. Because at the end, her face is disfigured. And by the way, I apologize for pushing you so much in the sequel.
Yeah.
Which is very,
it's okay. I will say it's cool what they do with her.
Oh, good. Cool. I love returning characters. And I was like, I hope they don't just leave this kind of, because, you know, it ends.
Yeah.
You don't know what she's going to happen. And maybe she's going to team up. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So you know, what we talked about, we previously interviewed Felissa Rose on the podcast, who had nothing but incredible things to say about you and Damien. What was it like working with her, with such a horror icon, you know?
Well, I unfortunately was not on set the same day as Felissa.
Oh, no.
I hope that's not spoiling anything, but it's like, oh,
she lives.
Oh, okay. But you got to meet her, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, we've hung out together so many times at conventions. She's part of our family now. So it's like, yeah, that's why we're like, she loved the film so much. So we were like, okay, we'll just add you in. She's like, I just want to be a cameo type of role. We're like, okay, cool.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We did the same thing with Tamara Glenn as well. We're just like, yeah.
Yes, from Halloween 5. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're getting all the horror stars. So, speaking of conventions, after all this huge reception with Terrifier, have you gone to a lot of conventions, and what has it been like?
I love the conventions. They're so much fun. It's just like, it's like a big, huge rock concert for me. It's just like, it's a paid vacation too. So it's just like, this is great. This is what I've hated about this whole pandemic. I haven't been able to do conventions. So I'm just like, I miss them so much. I miss hanging out with everybody, and not just like the celebrities, but the fans. Cause like Damien and I are, we try to be very approachable. Felissa is the same way. Kane Hodder's the same way, where we usually hang out at the after parties and stuff like that and get to know everybody.
This is just a side note. Your director is very good looking. I just doubted myself.
Tim is single, and I think Damien is a straight man.
I'm just by the way.
Yeah. Like, if you want to put a good word in for
No. I'm just saying, he's a handsome guy.
No, that's funny.
He takes it as a compliment. That's how
Just so you know, from two people who are fans themselves, Tim and myself, like, we're so appreciative when people like you, who we love in these movies, love doing conventions, because it's our chance to interact. I mean, obviously the podcast too, but it's the chance for fans to interact with these people that they absolutely love in these movies. So the fact that, you know, because there's not every star is as excited to do conventions as it sounds like you and Felissa and others are. So it's really great to see that kind of enthusiasm and just appreciation for the fans, you know?
Oh, I have a question. What is the weirdest thing people have had you sign?
I would say tattoo. Of myself.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it's art, but like, they wanted my name tattooed on them, so I signed their arm and they got my signature tattooed. So I haven't had anything crazy yet, but that's inevitable probably one day where someone's like, sign this.
Any
like,
anything really memorable or creepy that someone has said to you at a convention?
Not really, no. It's just like I've just saw occasionally get people. I guess there was this one guy that was kind of perving out on the whole hacksaw scene and stuff like that. Where yeah. just kind of like, dude, he's like, how was it like being on set with a naked girl and stuff like that? I'm like,
I've never seen a naked girl. Can you tell
me? Like, dude, it's called professionalism. Like when you're doing scenes like that, that's not what you're thinking, especially when someone's in a dangerous situation like that, where she's having to hang upside down and she's very uncomfortable. She's in a room full of guys. And like, we wanted to make that as comfortable as possible for her. Yeah. So that was like the furthest thing from our mind. And that's not a sexualized scene anyway. So like this guy was just getting off on him. And I'm like, no, dude.
You're like, next.
Like, Catherine's like the guy a sister to me. I'm like, I don't think of her in that way. I'm like, that. I was like, no, let's not talk about that kind of stuff.
There's always one bad apple.
Yeah, there's a lot. But, you know, another quick thing. We just have a few last questions, and thank you for taking your time out this evening with us. But, you know, I read in a couple interviews that after Terrifier, you had really wanted to play the adult Richie Tozier in the sequel to It. You know, he's like the man of a thousand voices. Did you ever get to audition for that role? Did they just give it right to Bill Hader?
Oh, they just gave it to Bill Hader. And when I saw that, I was like, no, I'm cool with that. That makes perfect sense. He's perfect for it. And he was great. So it's like, I can't be mad.
He is great, but I mean, you totally fit that kind of persona, so I could see why you love that role. But I always wonder, I was like, I hope he at least got an audition, but then I thought maybe because they just gave
I haven't gotten to that level yet where like Hollywood's come calling me yet. So I'm like, I don't presume. It was like, I'm always amazed when I find out someone actually knows who I am. I'm like, oh, really? Thank you.
Well, by Terrifier 3, things may be changing.
Hopefully. I would love that. I would just like, because, you know, I don't want to just necessarily just do Terrifier my whole entire life. There's so many other type of roles I would love.
I would,
but, you know, there are other roles I want to play out there, too. So
Of course. But along those lines, though, I guess, and this is kind of an overarching question with it, like, how does it feel? Because basically you've portrayed a role that I think we both feel that has quickly become one of the most memorable and iconic horror villains. Like this is a role that I really feel like is going to last for a long time. Like how does it feel to have been a part of such a legacy like this?
Pretty good. It's just like, it's something we didn't expect though. We're just this little low budget independent film that we're like, well, we hope the people that liked All Hallows Eve like us, we'll see. So we didn't presume any of this. It was like one of our producers, like the first day he saw me on set in costume, he walked in, he's like, oh wow, now that is a look. He's like, that is an iconic look. That's like, we're like, I don't know, Larry. He's like, no, guys. It's like, this is going to resonate with people. I'm telling you now, this is going to take off. There's something special.
There's millions of clowns out there, and you know, there can be, but yours in particular is so memorable. Like I've seen many clown horror films, but yours really sticks out.
It really does. It really is testament to what you've. I mean, I know you kind of came into this character, but you really have taken it to another level because you know we've seen all of them, and it's like the character is so terrifying, and that's really terrifying. I get a nickel every time I use that word.
Yeah.
But it really is testament to your performance, and I think like it's almost tougher not being able to speak in a role like this. Like horror villains have it very tough. They have to express something without ever speaking, and with you, especially with the with the facial expressions and the movements and the comedy and everything. So it's really cool because I feel like it is going to become one of the classic horror villains.
I think it was, as they say, instant classic.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're hoping that's what's going to happen. Especially, I think and Damien and I both feel pretty confident with part two. We think part two is really going to put us on the map.
Awesome.
I think some people have already said we're already up there with the icons. Like, no, we're not there yet. It's like, I think part two though is going to really get our name out there because like we're still trying to, you know, innovate. In ways we don't want to pull back from anything we've done in the previous films. We're like, let's keep pushing the envelope. Let's keep trying to see how far we can go with things.
Yeah.
So we want to keep going forward and that, cause we know that's what the fans want to see. Cause like we've listened to all the comments. the positive and the negative reviews that we've gotten. And that's something that people, I think that's what really resonated with the fans. It's like, we gave them what they wanted to see in a slasher film that Hollywood has really been shirking on.
Yeah.
They're trying to play it too safe all the time in Hollywood and these films. It's the indie films that are the ones that are risking things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Damien feels like, it's like almost like a fan's director. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like really like a fan, probably a fan himself who knows really what fans want and cares about what fans want.
He is. He's a huge fanboy himself. I mean, he's literally named after Damien from The Omen.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. His mom, he said his mom even went and got a copy of the poster just so she could like spell the name right on the birth certificate.
Oh, my God.
He was born like from a jackal.
Yeah.
That's great.
Be nice to his mom. She's a lovely woman.
Well, we just have one final question for you. We ask this to every single person.
I've got one quick one.
Oh, then say
real quick. Now, if they offered you the role of Mr. McAfee in Bye Bye Birdie, would you do it?
Of course. Oh, Mr. McAfee. Conrad Birdie.
Oh, that's so good.
And if we scheduled a one-on-one with your previous high school director, would you tell him exactly what you thought of his decision not to cast
him? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Miss Rodenhauser and Mrs. Hayes.
Oh,
we got them. They're going to be on the Zoom. Hang on.
No, so our final question, we ask everyone we interview this. What is one thing that you can tell us about your experience working on Terrifier that you've never told any other podcaster, any other interviewer, any other publication? Just one thing you can tell us that you've never told anyone.
Oh, God.
It could be the littlest thing or the biggest thing.
It could be a minute detail.
I guess that we've all gotten so comfortable on set that we have farting competitions from time to time.
That's amazing. Wait, who, you and like the actresses or you and Damien?
Everyone.
Different people.
That is, and who's the winner? Who's the winner?
Well, he'll probably kill me for saying it, but it's Elliot who plays Jonathan, the little brother. There was this one night. Oh my God. I think we're on like hour 16, 17 or something. We're exhausted and he's behind me and he's like, I love him. He reminds me of a little version of me when I was his age. And I just hear him sitting behind me. We're sitting on like a crash pad and he's like, "Hey, David," he just sounds so tired. I'm like, "Yeah, buddy." He's like,
oh my God, that sounds amazing.
And like, it's like vibrating the ground and I just
earthquake.
He must not be comfortable.
Oh my God, I could not stop laughing for like 5 minutes.
Farts are funny.
Oh my God, we couldn't film because I just kept cracking up over it. I was like, "That was amazing.
That is
amazing. Like, you win.
That is hilarious."
His dad's over there just going, "Yeah, that's my son."
That's hilarious. Well, look, thank you so much for doing this with us. We've so thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you. We're incredibly excited about Terrifier 2 and what's to come. We know you have a huge, bright future ahead of you, horror, voiceover, whatever you choose. But thank you. We're going to be able to say we talked to him back in 2021 so thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, guys.
And yes, definitely. And we'll keep you posted when we're planning to release this episode and we'll send it to you. But yeah, thank you so much for doing this with us. And hopefully we'll stay in touch, okay?
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely. Just stay in touch. Where are you guys located anyway?
Los Angeles.
Oh, LA. I'm wanting to get out there eventually. It's like once this virus is over, that's when I really want to get out there. So
right?
Yeah, we told Felissa that we're going to get drinks with her when this is done. So maybe we can all do it together, all of us.
Yes, I want to move out there. I'm ready, but it's just like it's so hard right now with the virus.
You in New York City?
I am New York City, right? I've been here for about almost 14 and a half, 15 years now. So I'm ready for a change. I'm tired of the cold.
I get
it. Yeah, well, come on out. The West, LA is a lot of fun. I mean, not right now. Nowhere's fun.
Oh, yeah, nowhere's fun right now.
I'm like, just fun.
Yeah, this is
It's like, woo, house parties. That's why I'm like, just get this. I want this vaccine. Just get me a vaccine, man. I'm like, hate that I'm not an essential worker right now because I'm like, get me a vaccine now. I wanted them.
Totally understand. But soon, fingers crossed, yes. Soon we'll get back to some sort of normalcy where conventions will start again.
And hopefully Terrifier 2 will be on the big screen because, we all will go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we're, who knows? It's like, hey, that's one thing we've talked about. It's like, options for how to get it out to people. And I think Damien's talking about possibly doing a road show with it, kind of like what Kevin Smith did with the Jalen Silent Bob movie.
Yeah.
And, all that's up in the air because of COVID right now, but just like, because we don't know with considering the content matter of this film, if an actual big Hollywood studio system would pick us up and put us in theaters nationwide, because, the ratings board would be like, NC-17.
Yeah. But, like drive-ins are now like having a comeback and everything, and there's all sorts of ways, and that would be really, really cool. But
it would be so much fun because it's one of those movies that would be great for a big crowd of people.
Yeah.
Of course.
It would be so much fun.
Well, here's hoping.
We are
major supporters. And yes,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
we will definitely stay in touch. But thank you for spending your evening with us.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Y'all take care and stay safe out there, too, right now.
You too. Take care. Yeah. Have a good evening.
Have a good night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated on the podcast, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
To contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your movie recommendations or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast and gain access to our bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. We try to release at least one bonus episode per month and really appreciate the support.
Before we go, I just want to give a major shout out to our co-producer, Jacob Randall, without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. Please check out his true crime podcast. It's called Crime of Your Life, where he examines obscure and unsolved criminal cases and mysteries. It's incredibly engaging for both true crime lovers or just anyone who loves a good mystery. So we highly recommend Crime of Your Life.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.